with our study of this great book, the great book of contemplation, and which means looking within, looking at our true reality and fixing our mind on that, realizing our true nature of what I am and what the universe is. It gets revealed through this method of contemplation. Let us begin with this prayer. God, unto whom all hearts be open, and unto whom all will speaketh, and unto whom no privy thing is hid, I beseech thee so far to cleanse the intent of mine heart with the unspeakable gift of thy grace, that I may perfectly love thee and worthily praise thee. Amen. So, last Tuesday, as we stopped because of the time was over, we were studying this, that he says, we learn to connect to our spiritual spouse. A spiritual spouse is a beautiful, very important analogy, that connected to spouse in the worldly sense is one thing. It is for fulfilling some worldly desires that we have. That connection with the worldly spouse, a man or a woman, and then we live together and, you know, feel a sense of bond and connectedness, and in fact feel a sense of oneness at some level. Not that it lasts always or is not palpably present always, but there is this feeling that we are one, we are a family, we are together, and so forth. So this expression "we" comes about it. Now this idea is to be now understood in the spiritual sense with God, and with whom we can never be separated, and that is the God who is always with us, just as we cannot go away from ourselves. So also, we cannot actually go away from God. So, that is, our connection is with God all the time. We may say that I don't believe in God. Whether we say we believe in or whether we say we don't believe in, and the fact is, God is our true self. And so, there is no possibility of getting away from God. And so, He is our true spouse, our true mate, from whom it is not possible to go away. Other mates are, you know, kind of arranged, or for convenience we get together for fulfilling certain desires or certain lack in life, we come together, but important thing is that which is our true nature. With that we need to feel this intense connectedness. So it is being ever connected to your spiritual spouse God, the Almighty, the King of Kings, the Greatest. This analogy has been used by Saint John of Cross. It is also used, you can see, in the Song of Songs, which was the inspiration for Saint John's that spiritual canticle of souls. And this is an idea you find in Bhagavatam, in the great that devotional scripture, that God is the spiritual spouse of everyone. So everyone is depicted as a bride, whether male or female doesn't matter, and everybody is trying to get connected with that God. It is pictorially depicted in Ras Leela of Srimad Bhagavatam that the gopis, they are encircling Krishna, their most beloved. It is not that somebody wants Krishna, somebody wants somebody else. It is not that everybody will have a different spouse, a different husband, a different mate. No, it is all of us are different, but we all have the same God as our reality. And that circle suggests, you know, Krishna is in the center of the circle. So a circle has infinitely many points on its circumference, but one center. So we are like points on this, that circumference of the circle, and Lord Krishna, the Lord is the spouse, the core of our being. So that love with the spiritual spouse has to be enkindled in us, because we go run after our other worldly attractions, we lose sight of this real center of love. And what happens thereby is we go farther and farther from the real love. It is what in that case, what apparently is happening is that we are going to other objects, that is going away from the center, and thus we are missing the true love. So here it is therefore asked of a sincere spiritual aspirant. As we saw, this book is meant for a sincere spiritual aspirant who wants to realize this truth. This is not any kind of an academic study. In fact, he says that this book is not meant for them. He makes, in fact, this comment that I would rather have that this book is never seen by these people. It does not hold anything of interest for them. So this is for those whose aspiration for God realization is very intense and very real. There is no show in that. So there you see that he exalts the disciple to feel this loving connection with God. With whom do we love? Actually, our love for other things, if we analyze, it is love for ourselves. It is the love for anybody else is because of our connection to that person through self. This is illustrated in that wonderful passage of Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, where it says that no husband ever loves wife for the sake of wife, but for one's own self. And no wife ever loves a husband for the sake of husband, but for one's own self. Nobody ever loves kids for the sake of the children, but for one's own sake. Nobody loves anything in the world for that thing, but because of the self. And that is why we see this expression always. I love my dad, I love my mom, I love my husband, my wife, I love my children, I love my country, my community, I love my opinion, in all that is my, you know, that is connection with I is most important. I don't love everything and everybody. When it forms connection with me, that is when some I has been put in it, then I start liking it. Like put something, some sugar in anything, to the extent you put sugar in it, it becomes sweet. The sweetness belongs to sugar. So also put I in anything. To the extent we can put I in something, then that something becomes lovable. That something, because I is the source of love. So that is, and this true nature of this I is God. God is that source of all love. So that is why he says that look at this connection with the divine spouse, the King of Kings, the God. And then he says, go forward. It is this idea is very important. Go forward. That it is a matter of progress. It is a matter where not that it is 100% or nothing. And we begin the journey and keep on moving. It is gradually the progress takes place depending on how fast, how intensely we are traveling towards this goal. It is therefore the matter of progress, you know, that it is, and he says that, let me read. Go forward then steadfastly, look forward, and do not be concerned with things that are behind you. This is that go forward is, there is this nice story Sri Ramakrishna used to tell, that it is, there was a woodcutter and used to, you know, cut wood from a nearby place and sell in the market and would make a little money. And one day, a holy man met him and he told him, well, go forward, go forward. So he paid heed to his advice and moved on. And as he moved on, he first found a sandalwood forest. A sandalwood is very costly, very pricey. And so by selling the sandalwood, he became rich. But then that words of the holy man were ringing in his ears, that he did not tell me go to the sandalwood forest. He said, go forward. Let me go forward. And then he met a copper mine. and then got lot of money by digging out copper. But again those words were ringing in his ear, go forward. Then he goes forward and gradually sees a gold mine and a diamond mine and so forth. So thus he became a very rich person. So we have to keep on moving. There will be, you know, some auxiliary benefits that will come on the way. But we should not just stop there. We have to move on till the goal is reached. As Swami Vivekananda used to quote from Kathopanishad, that arise, awake and stop not till the goal is reached. One has to keep on moving in that direction. And while moving in that direction, other thing that he mentions, that that he is a jealous lover. We have to remember this, that God is a jealous lover, will leave you if you try to love someone else too. It is the tendency of compromising with the world is what really obstructs our path, our journey forward. We try to do, okay, I want to love God, no doubt, but I want this also and this also and this also. Can I have God with this, 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 this? That is like, you know, can I have the waking state as well as the dream state at the same time? No, when you wake up means the dream is gone. It is not possible to have a compromise between them. It is, if I want light, that means I don't want darkness. It has to go. It is because coming of light means going away of darkness. If I want truth, all that is not truth, I have to take mind away from it. That is the peculiarity of our love for God. In the world, you may have, you know, desire for one thing, and then it can be combined with some other desires, there is no problem. That, okay, I want to be a wealthy person, as well as I want to be a musician. And not that they are incompatible, they can be very good. Somebody can be a very good musician and maybe by virtue of his music can get lot of money, or because of various other reasons can earn lot of money and still be a musician. These two desires do not get into much conflict. But desire for God is desire for truth. Can it be combined for our desire for untruth? My desire for truth cannot be combined with my, you know, desire for appearances. This world is full of appearances. The truth is the divine existence. The appearances means they are here today, gone tomorrow. That is how we distinguish between reality and appearance. It is like the waves on the ocean. They appear and disappear. And the reality, the ocean, it survives the appearance and disappearance of waves. So therefore, you know, you cannot have, as Jesus says, you cannot love God and mammon together. Running after the worldly things, mammon, the money, god of money represents all the worldly desires that we have, because we feel if we have money, then we have the source of fulfilling them. If we don't have money, we cannot fulfill them. So if I have money, then I can lead a life full of all riches, everything that I wanted I can buy. And so Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount very categorically tells that no, you cannot have God and mammon. You cannot love God and mammon together. It is like going east and west. If you want to go east, well, you cannot basically then go to west. It is not possible that I will go to east as well as I will go to west. And they are opposite in nature. So, this is very important thing to know. He is a jealous lover. In the Old Testament, therefore, you read this great story about Abraham being told by God that you have to sacrifice your son. What is this sacrifice of son? Son represents there all that is very dear to a person. All other things that you have dear, you have to sacrifice them at the altar of God. He is very jealous lover. If you have love for something else, then God disappears. The great mystic, Sufi mystic Kabir, used to say, therefore, that the lane of love is very narrow. Prema gali ati sankari. The lane of love is very narrow. It cannot have two people in it. Either you are there or God is there. If you want to be there, you means all your worldly tendencies and all that. If you want to be there, God is not there. And if you want God to be there, then you have to sacrifice everything else. God is the most jealous lover. You can't share your love, some bit for God, some for money, some for my other friends, some for my love for travel, some for my love for music. No, you cannot have that. All because that is like the goal of life. Everything, all our energies are to be concentrated on that. When something becomes goal in our life, really, I mean, not that we verbally say that that is goal of my life, but when it actually becomes goal of your life, when you intensely feel that you need to achieve it, then everything that is conducive to its achievement, you like it or you do it. And that which is against it, you assiduously avoid doing that. So, this is as Sri Ramakrishna used to mention, that if you want to, you know, put the thread through the eye of the needle. The eye of the needle, very small, very tiny, and then the thread has to go through it. Now, if the thread has shoots at that end, then you can't put the thread through the needle. It should be one pointed. So, you first with your finger make it all one pointed. And then after making it one pointed, then you can put it through the eye of the needle. So all our desires have to be combined into one single desire. I want to realize God. All our scattered loves have to be combined together and in love for God. When they combine together, they automatically become love for God. Otherwise, you can't really combine them at all. If you say, well, can I combine all the my desires into, say, love for football? Can I do that? No, you cannot do that. Because football means whether you have the, you want to love football, you want to play or you want to watch or what you want, and then whether you love this club or that club, and whether you love to watch the game or eat the popcorns, that is all, you know, it has to get scattered. There is no possibility of single-pointed love to football. It can be an intense love, but never single-pointed love to anything else in the world. It will, the mind will like it for a little time, and then would say, enough, let me do something else. Like that P.G. Woodhouse story I had told sometimes, that there is the girl and the boy, they kind of, you know, fall in love. There were so many, to make the story long and funny, the plot, you know, goes on. And ultimately, to the end, towards the end of the book, they now finally join together, and the girl is sitting near the boy, and then says that, "Ah, it is so nice. I would sit there with you like this forever. I would sit with you like this forever." And the boy seemed to be a little more practical, and so he said, "I would also like to do that, but first I need a breakfast." So it is like that, you know. It's all right. At one time it is okay. At some other time it's not that good. So these things, they keep on, you know, the worldly loves keep on alternating. Sometimes it is there, sometimes it is not there. Because none of them is our real love. All loves can actually be combined into one only in God, not in anything else. So if you can combine them all together, that is God. If you are single-pointedly concentrated in your love in anything, then that is God. There should be no other. That is very important. That is that God is a jealous lover. So, therefore, he says, seek God alone. That it is that you must do whatever will help you to forget all the beings whom God has created and all their works. It is the love for created beings, that is what he says, and love for God, the creator and the created beings. Let me read. Lift up your heart to God with a meek stirring of love, seeking God himself and none of his created things. Think of nothing but God himself, so that nothing will work in your mind or in your will, but only God himself. You must then do whatever will help you to forget all the beings whom God has created and all their works. Your thoughts and your desires are not to be directed towards them, nor to touch them in any way, neither in general nor in particular case, but you are to let them be and pay no attention to them. And this is what a spiritual aspirant has to actually undertake. This is a big undertaking, that our mind gets distracted towards the created things. And sometimes we tend to, you know, justify it by saying that God is in them too. I want to love God. And I say that by mouth, you know, that yes, I say to myself, yeah, I want to love God. But then God is in everything. And God is in football also. So my love for football, can it not be considered as love for God? Well, I am just cheating myself there, that's all. Am I really thinking of God when I am loving football? No, God is just pushed aside, not anywhere in my awareness. So, it is God is in everything. But, am I aware of God or am I getting attracted by the appearance of the things? It is very important to pay attention to this, that I may glibly say that I love God and then God is in everything. If I know this thing, that God is in everything, what it actually means is God alone is. Think of this statement seriously, I mean. God is in everything. That means God is in all persons. God is in every piece of furniture. God is pervading this air. God is in every atom, every electron, every particle that you can think of. Now, what is the universe but God alone? God alone is. It is, if we say seriously God is in everything, what it means actually is God alone is. God alone is, that is the meaning of God is in everything. There is nothing else but God. That is the meaning of it. If you say, if you look at this word everything, every single thing is God and God alone, and that means God alone is, nothing else exists. So let us keep this thought very strongly in our mind, that all that we see as created things, they are the appearances, come and go. Let our minds be directed to that from whom these appearances are being projected, getting emanated. This emanation idea is very strongly present in many Christian mystics' books, that it is this whole universe is emanation of God. That is, it is glory of God all around. It is God alone is. Those things are like the rays of the sun. They are not separate from the sun. It is the sun appears through all these infinite rays. So also these are all appearances of God. Sri Ramakrishna used to give another beautiful analogy about it. He would say the magic and the magician. The magic, a magician comes on the stage and shows a lot of funny things. They come and go. He shows an empty box. and brings out so many things out of that empty box. Now, they are all, you know, the sleight of hand, and that in an empty box you cannot have all these things really. But because of the skill of the magician, we get deceived. So there, as we know that we are looking at a magic show, so we are aware that all this money that he brings out, all hundreds of thousands of dollars that he is throwing all around through the empty box, those are not real. If the magician had that trick really, he wouldn't have to put up these shows and ask ticket money. So the magician alone is real. All the show is kind of flop. Flop in the sense that it is appearance. It comes and goes. So this world is like that magic show. God is the magician. He alone is real. Other things, they appear like magic and are gone in no time. And can we feel this truth? That is what is meant, that all created beings and their works, God alone is glorified in that. So he says, pay attention to God. And this idea in here is what is most intriguing. Most intriguing idea, really. This is the work of the soul that is most pleasing to God. All the saints and angels rejoice in this work, and they do all that is in their power to assist it. If we embark on this work, then all saints in the world, all angels, everybody will come to our help, because they rejoice in this work. That yes, yes, come on, this is the soul that wants sincerely to realize God. Let me step in and help this person. All saints' help will come to us. In fact, that beautiful Sanskrit prayer says, Madhuvata ritayate madhuksharanti sindhavah. For that soul seeking the truth, may the air blow, bless, may the oceans, they bring out bliss. Everything in the world will be seen as very, very helpful to take the journey towards God. On the face of it, it may not always be pleasant. Because of our attachment, many times the education that takes us away from truth appears to be a kind of cruelty of God. That very famous story about Krishna and Arjuna. That story is really, whether it is historically true or not, I don't know. But the moral is great. They were friends walking in the forest together, and then it is evening. So they thought, let them find some place to stay for the night. And they saw a nice palatial house. And they thought that they can ask for shelter for the night. They can stay there for the night and move on. So they knocked on the door, and the door was opened. The owner of the house, he welcomed them. Oh, you okay, Krishna? Very good. It is a privilege to have you. So stay for the night. And so he arranged, he told his servants to arrange for the room for Krishna. And generally took didn't pay much attention though himself. He was busy in other things, and so but the arrangements were there, and so Krishna and Arjuna spent the night there, and as they were leaving, they took leave of this owner, and Krishna blessed him. Oh, you are thank you very much for your hospitality. May your wealth increase more and more. All these riches that you are having, let them become increasingly, let them grow increasingly. And then they left the place, continued on their journey. Again, as the evening was falling, they again thought that they should stop. And so this time they saw a small hut of a very poor person. So they thought that okay, this is poor person's hut, but maybe he will be able to accommodate us. So they get there, and this poor man, he was a devotee, and so he became so overwhelmed as Krishna and Arjuna came. And then he said, oh, please come in, what a great fortune it is that you have come, and I don't have anything worthy to be, you know, of your status, all, but I will do my best. And then he, with great love, he arranged for their stay. He had nothing in the house, only a cow was there, and no other wealth, only a cow was there. He milked that cow and then gave Krishna and Arjuna that milk to drink for the nights. And then they retired, slept, and Arjuna was feeling very happy. Wow, this is what a great devotee he is. And then when it was time next morning to leave and be on their way again, Krishna again took leave of this poor man and blessed him also. The blessing was, may your cow die. And Arjuna felt horrified at this. What is this? I just don't understand it. You may be God and you are my friend, but I must register my protest here. This is terrible. That rich man, he didn't pay even attention really to us. He had everything and we stayed comfortably, that's okay. But to him, you blessed him with growing wealth and all that. And this poor man, he had nothing, but he so lovingly, with such devotion, he welcomed us and he did everything for us, whatever was possible. Now he was poor, what can he do? But that's no reason for you. The only thing he had was that cow. And you said that may your cow die. Just what will happen then to this man? And Lord said, well, that is my way of doing things, you know. That is how I work. You won't. Men work in one way. God works in another way. But explain. Try. You know. I want to understand. You see, that man, that rich man, wanted just money. So I gave him money. You have more of it. Suffer more by that. What can I do? You know. You are looking for money. You will get money. This poor man, he had love for me, but he had a little attachment for that cow. So what I really meant, not the death of cow as such, your cow, that attachment to cow, your cow may die. That is the thing, you know. All our attachments have to go. And then the love for God will actually manifest in our life. To the extent we can do that, the love of God manifests in us. So, he says that it is, everybody will be assisted by, to fulfill this. All saints will come to our help. All those realized souls, they will stand by us because this is the work most pleasing to them. Yes, all Sri Ramakrishna will be by our side when I am doing this work. And he says, by contrast, all the demons will be furious at your doing this work and they will try to defeat it in every way they can. Naturally, you know, so it is. All of mankind living on earth will be helped by this work in wonderful ways of which you are not even aware. This is another problem that is hinted here. That it's all right, you know, to strive for God realization. Okay, but what about the world? And we should do good to world. I may realize God, but what good it will do to so many millions of people around? You should tell me something by which, on the one hand, I will realize God, and on the other hand, I will be of service to people. But all that is what is called social service, with the aim as a society. Is, well, as Swami Vivekananda says, what do we do? We collect a few million dollars. With half of that, we may build a hospital. Remaining half is squandered about here, there. The officers and others, they take it. And so, and that hospital, how long, how many get served by that? Does it remove all the evil in the world? But this work, if somebody does, it becomes, you know, that person becomes a radiator of the love of God, becomes the source of inspiration for everyone to really go beyond the sufferings. The hospitals and all that will not be of much help to go beyond the sufferings afflicted by this world. They will be able to give relief from our physical pain. But what about the more important thing in life? That we are constantly suffering. If we have fairly good health, then we suffer as healthy people. If we are sick, we suffer as sick people. Suffering is a common aspect there. Not that those who don't have any significant health issue, they have no suffering. They suffer as healthy sufferers, those others are sick sufferers, that is the only thing. So, this will help the whole world. If you become, see who has helped the world more, these social reformers or people like Buddha, Jesus, Vivekananda, Sri Ramakrishna, have they helped the world more? Even the other so-called charitable things also become possible only because of the common God that resides in everybody. So when one realizes this truth, then the philanthropy also becomes a true philanthropy, otherwise not. So he says further that it is, and you yourself are cleansed and made virtuous by no other work as much as by this. And yet, and this line really struck me, because we all have the idea that it is such a difficult work to realize God, the spiritual life is such a difficult work. And do you agree, Diane, with this statement? And that this is the simplest work. God realization is the simplest work. That is what he says. It threw me really off. Oh my goodness, it is so much of a struggle. And he says that this is the simplest work. Funny. What, Charles, what do you think? You fully agree with this statement? And this is the simplest work of all works that we do.
Well, simple in the sense that there's only one reality and it's not complex, I guess.
But simplest to achieve also, yeah. Actually. Because all other achievements are not really achievements at all. Tell me, what is simpler than to catch the thing? Whether to catch the thing is the simple thing, or catch the shadow is the simple thing. Can we ever catch shadow? It is not at all possible. It is the impossible thing. And this work is to catch that which is. And so it is the simplest thing. Simplest work. Simplest work. It is really, when I think of it, yeah, there is nothing in the world that is simpler than realizing God. Only because we are too complicated, and so simple things appear to be difficult, and difficult or rather impossible things appear to be simple. That is how our idea goes, you know. Okay, realizing God is okay, but it is, you know, a difficult work. First, let me accumulate enough money, and then I will go to realize God. So, is it a simple work to accumulate enough money? First of all, nothing, that is, it never becomes enough, you see. You keep on thinking more and more and more and more. It is never enough. So accumulating enough money is a very difficult work. It is, but comparatively, if you see realizing God, you don't have to go anywhere. It is, it doesn't require constant travel. This does not require knowledge of mathematics and engineering, the knowledge of many different skills and crafts. No, not necessary. This is just so simple. God is reality within me. The simplest of the work is to realize God. And then this idea we will explore next time. No matter what you do, this cloud, this darkness and this cloud is between you and your God. All our doings are in that cloud of unknowing. Cloud of unknowing. Our knowledge also is in this cloud of unknowing. This is the great idea. Actually, the title of the book comes from this. the cloud of unknowing. This is the first reference of cloud, and we shall explore it. This book has 75 chapters, and today in our fourth class we just embarked on the fourth chapter. So 71 more chapters. So, but it is not the question of finishing the book, you know. It is whatever we can learn and improve our life, that is more important, I think, rather than otherwise finishing the book. Okay, so we see this, okay, this is easy to finish, you know.
You read like Swamiji.
Huh?
You read like Swamiji. Swamiji read very quickly.
Oh, okay, yeah, that is, you have to get that capacity to read that fast and with everything, bringing that realization, you know. So, that capacity, if you have, then you, then we don't even need to read, really. So, but we will proceed after the foundation, it becomes easier. So, any questions? Okay, Paul, then Charles.
Excuse me. I think that the find God is the simplest thing.
Yeah.
But what's difficult is the our resistance to letting go.
Yeah, exactly. And that is the difficult thing. Our attraction to the world is difficult to let go. So, that is, otherwise it is simplest thing. It is so simple. How simple it is, you know, for me to meet Paul. Well, just a few feet distance, you know, very simple to meet Paul. But imagine if my face is in the opposite direction. Then it is very difficult. I have to go 25,000 miles to come there, you know. Very difficult work. So, the difficulty is turning, you know, turning around, that is the difficulty. So, you are right, that is the difficult part, but the moment we decide, then we see it is not that difficult. It appears difficult only because we don't give it a try. Our psychologically, we feel ourselves too weak to do that. Actually, we are very strong, but we tell ourselves, no, I am not ready yet. It is the funny thing, I am not ready yet. What the meaning of yet is, I just don't want, that's all, that is the meaning of yet. Everybody is ready, really. The only thing is that I have to say that, yes, I am ready. If I say, well, you can just turn the face and you meet Paul right there. Why don't you just turn? I am not ready yet. It is a laughable situation. I am not ready yet. It is, if I really want to see Paul, and just so simple to turn the face, then I say, I am not ready. It is all really speaking, just creating more difficulties for us, shooting in our own foot, and then complain that I cannot walk, you know. It is like that. Yes, Charles?
Well, I'm signed up to go to a meeting tomorrow to support Bernie Sanders for president. But what you're saying is, I should give that up. He really seems to care about people. But I should give that up and just focus on God.
Well, it is, if you can focus on God, but it is not question of not going to support Bernie Sanders or whosoever it is.
Right.
It is, that is not the question. By not going there, are you going to God? It is not going or not going. It is the question of Seeing that God alone is my love.
But God alone is, it doesn't matter who wins the election.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't matter who wins the election. That now you are, you know, you are grown enough, having seen so many elections.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is. Yes, Abhijit.
So after going 24,000 miles, you will still not be able to see Paul's face. You will see his head.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but maybe if you, yeah, exactly. That is why it is. You are very correct. It is a very limited analogy. Means it is unending, really. The distance is infinite if I am not facing him. The 25,000 means there is no possibility, really. That is the idea. Correct. Yes, Ravani.
What did the author mean when he says that God is a jealous lover and he will leave you? Because we know that it is not true.
Means you will, what it means is, then you will not find God. He won't leave you. But you will not find God. That is, your finding is the question. You will not find God if...
It sounds as though God is with me, but if...
God is with you, but you won't find by directing your love to other places. That is why you will miss God. Not that God will leave you. He is there when you say that I don't want anything, but I want God. As Sri Ramakrishna used to give that analogy, that mother is busy with her kitchen chores, daily works, and so gives a little toy to play with to the baby. And as long as baby is busy with the toy, the mother doesn't really, is not worried. Okay, she is busy with cooking and whatever other things she needs to do. But when the child sees that, I don't want this toy. When the love for all these toys is over, you really want mother, then the child cries aloud, I want mother alone. At that time, the toys become meaningless. They are just kicked aside. You can see that is very illustrative of children, when they are busy playing. At that time, if the mother even calls them, they don't like to come. No. After 5 minutes, those 5 minutes go on, But when really they want mother, then they put the toys aside, cry for mother, and then mother comes and picks the baby. So it is like that when we want God, we don't want now anything else. That is, then God manifests before us. Till then, God will has no time. That is why He is jealous lover. Okay, if you are loving a toy, then I am not there for you. Love toy, that's fine. So, it is when you see that the toys are not satisfying me, then you want God alone. Then you discard all the toys. It is so funny. I saw one child, that little girl. She was playing there in the children's room, and then that mother was, hey, come, let's go. No. And the mother was then busy around here. And then afterwards, she got tired of the toys. And then she became, aware that, yes, I need mother. So, threw away the toys, didn't look at them, and that is how, if we want to love God or the love of God, then the love of other things is a big obstacle. very big obstacle. It is that will not let us love God. It is impossible. That is why he says he is a very jealous lover. God is a jealous lover. Actually, he is quoting from scripture. It is not that he is saying. It is in the Bible. He is a jealous lover. It is not that he is, because that is the truth. God is, he is one without a second. So if you think of second, then there is no God. Well, he is gone. This is, and that is where, as Paul was saying, that yes, all that other loves, if they attract me, that is the problem. That is why I am not seeing God. It is, the difference is like going east and west, you see. Not possible to have both going hand in hand. In fact, most spiritual lives, they come to grief by trying to strike a compromise. Or what is a good word? Compromise sounds a little bad word, but the good word we use, euphemism, you know, America is well known for that. It is that we say, no, let us strike a balance. Life should be, it should be a balanced life. So what is their balance? Some truth and some non-truth, that is not really a balance there. So, that is the reason for God being a very jealous lover. It is, and not only he, that all sages have maintained this, that it is not possible to love God and mammon together. In fact, that is the meaning of renunciation. That why you need to renounce to realize the truth. What is to be renounced? The attraction for all other things and which bring pain in life. If we have that attraction, whether we realize it at this moment or not, every such attraction is going to pile pain on us. There is no doubt about it. At a point it may appear pleasant, but as Bhagavad Gita says, each of these pleasures is a source, a cause of pain. So there is no doubt about it. It is every single pleasure that we try to take from the world that becomes a source of unseen pain. So, therefore, when you see this, then you turn your back, as that Upanishad says, prishthatak kritva, you turn your back to them no more. This also says, therefore, that put all the created things behind you, don't think about them anymore. Yeah.